Let's see. So everybody's good. Everyone sounds alive. That's a good thing.
Yeah, somewhat. Well, now I'm all jacked up on Ric Flair's Woo energy drink.
So. Hell yeah. What does that shit taste like?
What
flavor
bad.
Did you get? Are there multiple flavors? Is it just one Wooberry?
Yeah, so we had to buy a six pack of it, and there's three flavors. Dragon fruit, which is the one I'm most excited to try. Lemon, and then my least favorite, which I'm drinking now, strawberry banana. And it's just like a bad energy drink. That's all. It was way too much money. Such a waste of money. On the can, the slogan is, if you don't like it, learn to love it. Which, you know, Rick's had some sexual assault allegations. So I don't know if that's what I would put on a can.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, it was our fault. We made a mistake. Spider said it was clear. I wasn't clear, and, you know, I didn't want to tear my car up, tear his car up either. I respect everybody, and I demand respect. And, you know, I apologized to the guy when he came over the car, explained to him what happened, and then he took it to another level when he started calling me an idiot and whatever else, and I don't appreciate that. I'm not going to take it. I told him how I feel. I called him out. He didn't show. You know, and so, you know, I'm good with it if he's good with it, but I'm not going to be disrespected by no means.
Yeah, I guess I had a dinner date at Applebee's last night that I didn't find out until it was too late. It's a shame. Love their riblets and boneless wings, but...
All right, folks. Welcome to Meet Me at Applebee's. Fresh from the RCR Hometown Men's Fellowship meeting. It is myself, Brian, with Ashley and Rob, as always, folks. How are we doing today?
Doing pretty good. True Love, you got any raccoon problems this week, or have they kept themselves down in the holler?
The raccoons have kept themselves in the trash bin.
Good.
I was not allowed into the men's only fellowship meeting, though.
Yeah, it was cool. The power team was there. You know what that is? You ever seen the power team?
Yes. Yes, I have. That is a Christian wrestling team. All the really cool guys are going to be there. Got the Dillons, Michael McDowell, Trevor Bain. I'm really curious to
know. This is an upcoming event, right?
Yes, October 3rd. So if you're going down to the Roval race, which we'll get into that in a second, but
best show of the weekend is this prayer breakfast.
Yeah, if you're going down for the race, get there early on Tuesday. It's going to be from 7 to 8:30 at the RCR Event Center. I don't know what happens here. I don't know if this is a Christian thing or if this is a thing for, like, male bonding or what.
Both.
It's Promise Keepers, right? Remember that shit?
Something like that, maybe.
In the morning?
It's 7 at night. It's at night. So technically you should probably go to Applebee's before you go to this. Get your meal in, you get all your energy, you're ready to pay attention to whatever the fuck happens.
To pay
here.
Attention.
It says men want to lead. It's in our DNA.
Yep.
I don't know what that could mean. But
check.
Yep. Racing happened this weekend. Where do we want to start?
Well, it's up to you guys. There was a lot of short track racing. Of course, the World 100 happened this weekend, but we can save that for later if you guys want to get into Kansas, because there's a lot to talk about there, too. Another great race at Kansas.
Yeah. It was good. Not quite as good as the spring. And also, on a personal note, there was some misfortune with some drivers that I had bets on and in my fantasy league, so that kind of bummed me out a little bit, but it still was a good race.
Truex guy, huh? You put some money on Martin Truex Jr.
I didn't put money on him, but he was in my lineup for fantasy, and he was immediately done. So between him and Bubba's issues, that really put me in the shitter for the weekend there.
Yeah, not many places you want to try and put Bubba Wallace on your lineup, but Kansas is one of them, and yeah, it didn't go too well.
No.
Poor guy.
Did you put $30 on Josevar again?
No, I actually only put 10 whole cents on Josevar this week. So thankfully there were no betting mishaps. And also thanks to a tip from listener Mike, last night DraftKings basically gave away $10. If you put a $10 bet on a point being scored in whatever football game, Bills, Jets, whatever was happening last night, you got your money back. So I got 10 of my Busher Bucks back, thankfully.
10 bonus Busher Bucks back.
Yep. Yep. But that's betting shit. Let's talk about what happened on the track. Again, I don't think anybody was surprised by Toyota's, especially the 23-11 dominance. Shit, I think they've won the last three races here, I want to say.
All of 45 car.
Yeah, which is crazy. Yeah. Three different drivers, too. So, and Denny was in there, too, winning also. So it's like, I don't know. Denny could have won the race, and I don't know if he should have, but I mean, it was the late race cost and kind of fucked up his race. But
hey, he fucked it up so bad he had to blame Kyle Larson for it. So love that shit.
Larson pissed off a few people,
but he did nothing this time. So
no,
it's just because he exists.
Yeah. It's not Ross anymore. Although Ryan Blaney was pretty pissed at Ross Chastain. Did you see that shit?
No, what did you do there?
I guess they were racing for, like, I don't know, fucking ninth place or something like that at the end of a stage. And Dustin Albino tweeted this out. It was from Ryan Blaney's radio. It says, "Go fucking knock Brandon McReynolds out. What a fucking dickhead after not being able to get by Ross Chastain for fourth. You would go faster if you looked out the fucking windshield," he says of Chastain as the stage concludes, which I don't know what Ross is supposed to do here. They're going for stage points, and both of them are kind of up shit creek in the points, particularly Ross, so he kind of needs those stage points. But and I like that Brandon McReynolds also responded to that tweet by saying, "That's cute," which it is. So
Blaney is like a completely different person on the radio. He is the spiciest person.
Douchebag, yeah.
On the radio. But normal Blaney is super chill.
Yeah.
It's night and day.
Well, you know, Chastain does block a lot, so it's one of those things where if you're guilty of it egregiously once or twice, no matter what you do, people are going to be on your ass. So I don't think he's cleared his reputation from earlier in the year, so I'm sure that has something to do with it. But yeah, Blaney was pissed off. Chase Elliott was pissed off because Brad Keselowski decided to clear himself on pit road. And no one from the 9 team decided to say anything about it, so they just let him get mad.
Thanks, Eddie.
Yeah.
And what exactly was the reason for Chase hitting Kyle again?
Kyle washed up. Well, he didn't wash up anyway. He went up pit road a little bit to the right into Chase's side because Brad Keselowski came out of his pit stall and kind of forced him to do it. Nice. And he was just on XM a few minutes ago. Chase was, and he was saying that he understands the situation now and he's not mad about it. It is what it is, you know. Which, you know, you take one look at that video, it kind of, you know, it's pretty obvious what happened there. It was Brad's fault, and Kyle, like, kind of really not a whole lot he could do there. And if I'm Chase in that position, I'd be pretty mad, too, if my teammate fucking doors me for no reason and you get no context. But I don't know. It just seems like the 9 team just doesn't talk to each other. They just kind of let shit happen. Running out of gas and shit, and, you know, your teammate slams you on pit road, and it's not his fault, but you just let him think it is, and now you risk 200 cars taking damage instead of just one. I don't know. It's just fucking stupid. I don't know what they're doing up there. Maybe they need to get some new radios or something, or some signal sticks like they used to have at dirt tracks.
A little replay screen on their little digital dash there.
Yeah, it is the crew chief that leads him off pit road, so if there's any sort of clearing to be done, it's actually not the spotter, it's the crew chief, so you think Alan Gustafson might have said something about that before Chase tried to fucking destroy both of their cars. But I don't know, it's pretty minor, I guess. And
to do anything,
you know, Larson and Chase still got good finishes, so, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, you'd think that maybe they would talk just a little bit on pit road.
I love it when your two drivers get pissy at each other. I just want to let you two talk about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think
no skin in that game.
I think we both
is what it is.
I think we both kind of agree that, you know, it wasn't really anybody's fault but Brad Keselowski. Yeah.
Oh, I don't blame Brad for this. It's not his fault. It's not his fault that those two.
This time it was. No, it's not his fault that Chase Elliott doesn't like Kyle Larson.
Yeah, that's
a whole other thing.
Of history there. Yeah.
Yeah, but this particular incident, and like I said, Chase was just on XM about 20 minutes ago talking about it, and you know it seems to be water under the bridge. But I don't know. The real thing that I take away from this that really bums me out is Chase knew damn well what he did. Driving into Larson, he was angry, saying "Don't fuck with me," and then he has to go out and give this interview like he did, where, oh, I don't know what happened, you know, because you're going to get fined for doing it. Like, what do you expect?
Ever since Samlin, like, you can't say shit. People don't want to say anything.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a fucking bummer.
Which is, it's unfortunate for fans.
I was going to say, the only people that lose here are the fans, because we all know what happened, you know? We're not fucking idiots.
Well, to me, though, I feel like, and again, this is something that it's NASCAR's judgment call, but it's one thing if somebody wrecks somebody else at speed and then brags about it, but if there's a little bit of, like, pit road bumping like this, where nobody's, like, no one's going to fucking get hurt, no one's cars are going to get destroyed unless somebody makes a really bonehead mistake, like, I feel like this is something you could actually talk about and not worry about getting fined. But again,
but do you want to take that risk in the playoffs?
That's fair, I guess. NASCAR
and again,
hasn't
Chase Elliott, not in the driver's playoffs, but, you know, the 9 is still in the owner's playoffs, and that's how they sign the checks. So he has just as much skin in this game on the corporate side of things. So I get it. It's just, Jesus. They should hire me at Hendrick to be a mediator. I'll go out to Krispy Kreme and get a warm, you know, a dozen. Set them on the table, you know, and we'll have us a little chat.
Well, just make sure you put this podcast on your resume.
Exactly.
And I think you're in.
Exactly. I've never said any banned words on this show. Not once.
That's true. I don't know if all the topics would be okay for word consumption, but no slurs, so you got that.
For as angry as I was on Sunday, I'm giving a very measured take, because I also saw the replay, so it's all good. You know, everyone's fine. And then Tyler Reddick, no one's talking about poor Tyler Reddick just slaying people on that restart and winning the fuck out of that race.
Yeah, that pass was brilliant and just as good as you could do. So that was really cool to see him win and do a burnout with flexing out the car, which I didn't think that was humanly possible with him.
He's so tiny.
You know, he pulled
sitting on his little phone books in there. And
he earned himself some hot, fresh barbecue ribs in Victory Lane.
Fucking A right. But yeah, I love seeing Tyler Reddick succeed. So that was cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of Carson Hocevar earlier, I think he got another top 20. So
he did.
Mm-hmm. You know,
definitely handling himself pretty well in that cup car. And
Lame duck legacy.
Two top 20s in his two starts, and Noah had two top 20s all year.
Yeah, that's not great. Not good. I mean,
but also, Eric Jones has had two top 10s in a row, so...
Yeah, all of a sudden, the 43 is fast, which makes no fucking sense. But
like I said, Lame Duck Legacy's coming through at the end of the year, going to make the most of their last couple races with Chevy, giving them probably absolutely nothing as far as info is concerned. So,
yeah,
good for them.
But yeah, I didn't really watch the Xfinity race yet again. I had a very busy Saturday, personally speaking, which I guess we'll get into in a second here. Between the World 100, going to Monadnock, and some other shit I got into, I was not in front of the television at all. Did you guys watch the Xfinity race at all?
Yeah. The race was whatever, but the battle for that final playoff spot was the real show between Kligerman and Herbst and Brandon Jones.
Yeah, it was a weird little, like, math game there where it was Kligerman's to lose, but if Brandon Jones had got the win, he would have gotten the spot, but he was really anywhere near threatening for the win. It was another John Hunter Nemechek show, and it was fine. I think Sunday was definitely the more entertaining race.
Man, Brandon Jones or his dad or somebody must be one of the top 10 richest men in America for him to continually to have a seat in the Xfinity series. My God.
Well,
not great.
Yeah, I mean, he's not great. I would put Hemric in that same category as well, because he doesn't do anything for me, yet now he's in talks to get the Colleague Cup ride, so I don't... There's a few drivers just I don't get, and he's one of them, too.
Yeah, I don't... I actually hadn't heard that. But, you know, Hemric, he at least is a champion, right? He's won a race. He got one.
Yeah.
He got one, folks!
Technically, yeah. One and done.
And he fought somebody, right? He fought Noah Gragson that one time, so that was funny.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing, wasn't it?
As another example. Didn't Noah go up there and try and swing on him, and then Hemric also was a better puncher, much like the last time he tried to do that?
Right.
Hopefully Noah's taking some fight lessons, and maybe he'll bring Kyle Larson along with him. The two of them can learn how to...
Ripped.
Yeah. after his jail sentence. He's just lifting weights out in the yard right now with Matt DiBenedetto. Yeah. Oh my God. And the truck race, that finish was nuts. I didn't watch that either, but I've seen the highlights a billion times, you know. But again, like, not to bitch about it, but that's, I don't know what happened in the Xfinity race, but that's two of three races this weekend that I know of, and two more examples of it just coming down to a fucking two-lap shootout at the end of the race, which is annoying as fuck to me, but that truck race finish was pretty nuts.
It was cool. Yeah. I was not expecting the Eckes to pull it off, but yeah, you're totally right. I mean, I don't know what the hell old race I had on the other day, and I was thinking about that, just how finishes aren't, I don't know, It's almost like people expect that people expect the red the green white checkered a lot of these races, and it's just, it gets old a lot.
And you know, it's at least, you know, it was a pretty natural occurrence in the Cup race. Again, I can't speak for the truck race at all, but in the Cup race, it was legitimate. You know, I think it was Chris Buescher, right?
Yeah,
which tire failure is being the hallmark of pretty much every fucking race that happened this weekend, whether it's short track, NASCAR, whatever. I mean, tire failures really shaped the World 100 as well as this Cup race. So yeah, it doesn't matter if it's Goodyear or Hoosier, this shit's blowing up everywhere. I guess they're ordering these fucking tires off Amazon or something. But
shame.
They're doing tires now, doing Hoosier knockoffs.
Some Linglongs. Get them Linglongs out there.
I'm trying to think. I think I was in Toledo earlier this summer, doing some antiquing, and somebody in their antique mall booth had a pretty recent Hoosier tire, like go-kart tire, still in the plastic, like for sale with a bunch of other racing crap. I thought that was really odd. So yeah, go to antique malls, maybe they're there.
Yeah, that's the quality this year. So. Yeah. But yeah, big race at the World 100. I guess we can just move into that.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Into the short track world real quick. Like I said, tires being the big factor throughout the weekend. A lot of big players having their hopes dashed by that, including my pick, Bobby Pierce, who won both Thursday and Friday night's prelims and got kind of screwed in the invert and got buried in the heat and started in the middle of the field but was working his way up in the big feature. But then blew a right front like a lot of people did. Jonathan Davenport, Hudson O'Neill, who was the eventual winner of the World 100, all had tire failures on Friday night. And yeah, just it sucks, you know. And it's going to be that classic sort of feedback loop that we see in every racing series where there's tire issues, where the manufacturer is going to blame the teams for the setups, and that's why the tires are failing. Mm-hmm. And then you know, the teams are going to come back and say, well, fuck you, we're giving you money for all this, why don't your tires stand up to the pressure? And it's just and nothing changes because there's a deal with the series or whoever the fuck. So you hate to see that, but overall, the World 100, incredible weekend. Like I said, Bobby Pierce winning the first two nights. He was my pick, but unfortunately, he had a failure and actually trashed the car, completely totaled it, that he's won so many races with this year. I forget what the stats are. Let me pull that up real quick because it was pretty impressive, and it's sad to see that thing go to the junkyard now. Let's see here. 24 wins and 50 races in 2023 for Bobby Pierce in that car. And I guess they're going to try and rebuild her, but yeah, it sucks to have that be lost to a tire failure. But overall, the World 100 was awesome. It seems like Eldora has managed to fix their track issues. The racing was fucking nuts. That battle between Jonathan Davenport and the eventual winner, Hudson O'Neill, in that Rocket One was fucking awesome. I encourage you to get on YouTube and watch the entire feature because I believe it should be up by now on the Flow Racing channel. But hell of a show. And again, you want to talk about playoffs being unfair. The Lucas Oil Late Model Series has their own version of the playoffs now. And by virtue of the Dirt Track World Championship at Eldora being the last race of the year and it also being a place that Ricky Thornton Jr. Kind of sucks at in comparison to everywhere else, there's a pretty damn good chance that he's not going to win this championship despite having a record year. So once again, playoffs don't work. They don't actually decide a fucking champion, and it's all kind of bullshit regardless of how entertaining it is. But that's little Uncle Rob's little soapbox there when it comes to dirt racing and playoffs and all that nonsense. Whatever, congratulations to Hudson O'Neill and the Rocket One team. Really really put on a hell of a show out there. And yeah, Eldora is fucking back, and this race was proof positive of why it's so important and why people keep coming back to this place and selling it out year after year. And I don't know if you saw the overhead shots of this place. Completely fucking packed. Completely. Yes.
I do know that listeners of the show, Kyle from Columbus and Dylan from Toledo, were both there. Nice. I wish I was also there, but I had my own shit going on all weekend. But from what little I saw, it looked like a good race. And yeah, I was going to ask how the racing was compared to when you went, and it sounds like the track has definitely improved a little bit. So
yep.
That's good. Maybe I'll actually get there.
Yep. Friend of the program, Kyle Armstrong, who I bring up every week because he knows more about dirt late models than I do, he was there, and he echoed all that. Said it was a great time, and you know, I went to the Dream this year, which was probably the best experience I've ever had at a racetrack, and I just had an incredible sense of, to use a millennial internet term, FOMO the entire fucking weekend. I should have gone. I should have not started my new job when I did. I should have just gone to Eldora for the World 100 and maxed out another credit card to do so. It was stupid that I didn't, and I will regret it until I die. But next year, motherfuckers.
All right, well, next year we'll plan on it.
I did get to go to the racetrack, though. I went to the up to Monadnock for the Winchester Fair. The weather held off, despite there being literal rain when the sun was out. Sun showers about 15 minutes from the track on my way up. But I got there just as the feature started. Drank a beer with some strangers in the parking lot. Went in and saw a good show. Justin Bonsignore absolutely stomped a mud hole in everybody there. And then Austin Beers put on a show. He had a pretty shitty restart. He was on the front row and then fell back, and then spent the rest of the race kind of working his way back up, and definitely was the show. The whole thing took about 2 hours from, like, I'm talking like the modified race, four other divisions or some shit like that. I think it started at like 5:30. It was done by 8:15, 8:20. And I was at home to watch the B mains for the World 100. So,
God, this had to have been asphalt, I'm assuming, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was a NASCAR modified tour. Yeah.
Yeah, dirt track would not be
so happening. So God bless JDV Productions, who, by the way, are going to be taking care of all the booking from Monadnock next year and running the track, which is pretty cool. That guy does a great job of running a short track program. He came from Thompson a few years ago and kind of moved on and did his own thing. He's booked all the New Hampshire NASCAR modified races, and now he's taking on Monadnock full time, and I think that's going to be a big deal for that track. Again, beautiful little bull ring out in the middle of nowhere. If you have a chance to go up there, please do. You'll probably see me in the parking lot drinking beer with strangers. But yeah, that was fun. And I bought some really random diecast at the Brimfield Fair this weekend, which was cool. I managed to get a Rob Moroso Swisher Sweet hauler.
Which day were you there?
Saturday. So it was before I went to Monadnock. My wife and I went and spent a couple hours kind of perusing, and yeah, it was fun. That's an interesting show. It's a lot of really expensive shit now if you're into antiques and collectibles and all that. It's not quite as good as it used to be because everyone kind of charges internet prices for shit now.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad, I'm pretty sure my dad was there that day also, because he was sending me shirt pics, and he probably the coolest thing he found was like a t-shirt from the Tyson Holyfield fight where the ear bite happened, and he was like, "Can you believe this is $300?" I'm like, yeah, yes. It is. Like, yeah, I totally can believe that, Dad.
But yeah, it was fun. Like I said, I got a couple of diecasts off a guy, bought some records. Again, like, you kind of got to go into a giant fair like that knowing what you want to look for and just kind of having the laser eye as you scan through booths. And of course, mine is Shitty Racing Champions diecast boxes, you know, that'll pop out from 100 yards away, and I managed to get good ones. So
they're very easy to spot also. If you're a racing fan, like, diecasts, you know, they're not going to be hidden anywhere at the flea market.
And for the old shit I'm looking for, you can get a pretty decent deal. And honestly, you're not going to find that stuff at a NASCAR track anymore or in the gypsy tents so much. So I always go to Brimfield and come home with an armful of shit. So
yeah, if you're paying more than like $10 for a Racing Champions diecast, you're getting ripped off. Just a heads up. Doesn't matter what it is. Like, $10 max. Rob, do you have a media piece this week?
No, I'm not doing any media shit talk this week. However, I do want to yell at NASCAR a little bit for all these changes they're bringing to the Roval in a couple weeks.
Yes, I was going to say, we didn't get into that subject. So lots of things announced today, huh? Two changes that seems like nobody likes at all.
Yeah, no one is happy. Yeah, so they're changing the restart zone to be in the chicane, which is cool. That's going to be fun. And then also they're putting these stage breaks back in place. Now, they're always issuing points for stages, but now they're actually going to stop the race and have an artificial caution so everyone can come pit at the same time, which I don't know who asked for that. You know, I guess the fans, the fan council probably got upset that they watched a real race at Watkins Glen play out, and they actually could go mow their lawns or do whatever the fuck they had to do after it was over, because it took like 45 minutes to get taken care of. And they didn't like that. They liked sitting around for 3 hours watching guys watching commercials. So fucking whatever, I guess. Let's just change it again mid-season. You know.
Yeah, whoever's on the fan council needs to get fired. Yeah, because they are always making up stupid bullshit, or at least vote like, oh, the fan cancel advised us. Nuts.
I think they're just a really big they throw them under the bus a little bit, I think.
I think so too.
And they just let anybody. I was on the fan council for a little while. They let anybody on that fucker.
I think I still am. I just don't ever fill out those forms. Yeah. It's always like the same five questions every time.
Yeah, it was like, would you rather see five stages a race, or would you rather there be multiple stages a race? And so, I'm not even kidding. That's like, obviously it's probably a little more you know, clandestine than that, but Jesus, like, you already know exactly what NASCAR is going to do if you're on that. And if there's any reason to be on the fan council, so you can see what kind of horse shit is about to come your way, it's going to make you angry as a traditional fan. But my God, yeah.
I usually just fill out the end of the year ones that are directed at the broadcast booths, so I can tell them how terrible Fox is.
Well, suck it, haters and losers. Mike Joy doesn't give a fuck, and he will tell you so on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, he might not read the fan council responses.
I will be at the Roval, and at least I will have built-in bathroom breaks now. So.
I guess that is a benefit of stage racing, is now you know when to go get like a funnel cake or some shit.
Yeah.
So you're going to the Roval as well as Bristol?
Yeah, I've gone to the Roval every year of its existence, so
yeah,
might as well finish it out.
Are you gonna miss it when it's gone?
I'm sure I'll be at whatever race replaces it, so
yeah.
I'd be much more apt to go to that if it was back on the Oval, because the Roval's never really done much for me.
Yeah, I was excited about it the first year, and then now I just, again, just seeing the way that guys have been racing at tracks like that in Indy, I just don't fucking care.
Yeah,
I just don't care.
I agree.
I'd rather him turn Charlotte into a fucking plate track than do that again.
Okay. Let's not go that far.
Restricting to like 200 horsepower and, you know, take the windshields out because they'll be going 80 miles an hour. Let God sort it out.
Just put in the school bus. School bus.
A school bus race. There you go.
All right, well, that would work. Before we get into the video of the week segment, there's some breaking news from the world of NASCAR.
Drum roll, please.
Noah Gragson has been reinstated by NASCAR, and he will be racing in Toledo this weekend at an ASA race.
All the way back to the bottom.
Baby steps.
Yeah.
It'll certainly be better than an ARCA race, but Jesus, back to super lates.
Yeah,
but hey, that's the way you got to rebuild it when you do that and you alienate whatever sponsors you had. You know, Kyle Larson had to do it. He went out and pounded the dirt and built a legacy out of it. Honestly, I think he is way more popular of a driver because of that alone than anything else. And I think Noah has the opportunity to go out there and do some pavement racing and kind of show everybody why he belongs as well. And I think he can do it.
We'll see. I can't say I'll make
it. How buff
he
is.
Yeah, how much whey powder has he put into his body since he got
new muscles?
Do you see Jimmy Johnson out there talking about how he talks to Noah all the time and he's excited about his growth and all that shit? I was like, motherfucker, you're never hiring him back. You don't give a shit. There's no way they talk. I do my best to never talk to former bosses. That's just the policy.
Yeah.
Oh, real quick, we forgot to talk about this. I guess it's not really a DARF of the week, but the Landon Huffman crumb family drama has continued.
Catch me up on this, because I saw a couple tweets, but I still don't 100% know what's going on.
Apparently the case has been dropped. Whatever settlement happened, it is what it is. And then journalist Matt Weaver, the voice of Short Track America, if you ask some people, got a side of the story, or an updated side of the story from the Crumb family. They said it's all water under the bridge, and then Landon's like, that's not fucking true, you should have talked to me, and it turned into a whole thing. So I guess my this would be my DARF of the week, or my media watch, or whatever, is all of them. I don't know. I'm going to include all of them, but like, you think Matt Weaver would have reached out to Landon and gotten a more updated response, you know. But again, it's court, it is what it is. But yeah, the Crumb family fucking sucks, and it seems like they're getting off pretty easy here. So but whatever, community service, whatever, time served, whatever it is, I don't know.
I think it's a restraining order for a year.
Yeah, so they can't, they're gonna have to spot on the other side of the track. Well, I guess they're still banned, right? NASCAR didn't reinstate them. I don't think so.
I hope not. But hopefully there's some money coming too for the car and everything. I don't know how that all works. But
Landon Huffman, though, not happy with the way that was put out in the world by Matt Weaver. And yeah, I gotta say, I don't fucking blame him. So, but you know, Matt Weaver's pissing people off before. He's not afraid to go out there and ruffle feathers. So, you know, for shit like this. So, no real DARF of the week. Just it's, you know.
Just a media call.
Just a high wind warning out there. You know, we got choppy seas, folks. So be careful out there.
All right. Well.
Also, one more shout out before we move on to the monster truck country here. The IMCA Super Nationals drew over 1,000 entries.
Jesus.
So when your A feature is fucking crate modified, which is pretty much what that is. God, that show must have lasted to like 8 in the morning the following day.
Yeah, how did that work?
I don't know. Where was that race?
It was in Boone, Iowa. And in fact, I guess the track promoters are joking about how they ought to build two of them next to each other with shared grandstands so they can just get the show out of the way. But yeah, 1,000 entries for this. It's fucking awesome. Again, I talk shit about, you know, sealed crate modifieds, B mods, S mods, F mods, whatever the fuck you want to call them, you know, powder puff mods. But, you know, a lot of people drive those, and they are fucking everywhere. And the more racing we can get out there in the world, the more short tracks we can keep open because of this, the better. So if you can draw 1,000 of anything to anything, you're doing pretty well for yourself. So shout out to Boone and the whole IMCA organization for putting on that big of an event. And again, this is how much disrespect I throw at these things. I don't even know who the fuck won. Even though I'm shouting them out. So I'm going to just Google it right now before we move on to our video of the week here.
To be fair, they're like my least favorite modified.
Oh, you want to talk about bathroom brakes? Like, they don't need stage brakes at short tracks. This is always just a fucking dirt modified division that's going to go out there and give you one. Unless Uncle Kenny's out there. He runs them, so...
I don't know if that's a good selling point.
I like it just fine. Tim Ward won the championship. So congratulations, Tim Ward.
Yeah, congrats.
I think he follows me on Instagram.
Well, there you
good
go.
Job,
that's
Tim.
A deal. He beat 1,000 cars or how? I don't know. I'm sure there's multiple divisions. It's not 1,000 fucking B mods that showed up, because that would be, you know, that's the sign of the apocalypse right there. The skies are ripped open and Jesus is coming if you see 1,000 of those fucking roll up to your track. But I'm going to raise my little bush can up to the sky and to Tim for a job well done. Congratulations on beating all those motherfuckers. And, you know, hopefully we see more of that as time progresses. Mm-hmm. Now it's time.
Well, now it's time for the big show here. So yeah, the unofficial history of Monster Truck Racing, it's the next chapter here, and we are jumping to 1987. And
how do we not have a theme song for this yet?
You know, I don't know.
It's like the only real recurring segment we have, and we still haven't got any pomp and circumstance for it, so I'll work on that.
I could give you a couple suggestions for that, but we can talk about that off air, but... this is the first time we're going to see the TNT series in this reoccurring segment. Now, TNT originally started out as a tractor pulling sanctioning body in Louisville, Kentucky. I don't know if it was the 60s or the 70s they were started, but they've been around for a while. And in the 80s, like a lot of other motorsports shows in this category, they began adding monster trucks to the shows. And they were actually the first sanctioning body to put on a nationwide point series, which that started in 1988. In 1987, they were doing like exhibition races. There wasn't like a points title or anything like that, but you know, I believe there was, you know, purses and stuff at each race. And they, a lot of times they were ran as companion events with tractor pulling, which is what happened here in 1987 at the Indiana Hoosier Dome. In 88, it would go to just monster trucks only. It'd be its own separate thing, and the two sanctioning bodies would kind of almost split off in a sense. But again, in 87, it was its own thing here, and just races for the sake of races. So here we are in 87, the truck technology, it's starting to improve a bit more as far as trucks being able to run faster, actually get some air and not completely fall apart. But as you'll see, it's still not there, and it's not going to be there till the 90s, but it's improving. Axles aren't falling off just when you hit a car in the Astro, or the Hoosier Dome, this race. So the big reason why I picked this race as compared to other 87 races from TNT, you see it right off the bat. This race featured an infamous rollover from Bigfoot. I would say this is probably at the time the most violent monster truck crash documented. A lot of the times, there'd been a bunch of trucks that crashed prior to this Bigfoot wreck, and a lot of them were kind of slower rollovers. You know, they turned too sharp, or a couple of them would do wheel stands on cars but not have enough power, or the engine would stall out, and a couple of them rolled backwards. This is the first one that flipped forwards.
It's kind of like a sprint car wreck a little bit.
Yeah, it's pretty violent, and we'll get into it at the end of the show. But I picked this race because of this wreck. Now, this wreck was pretty heavily featured in one of the first Bigfoot VHS tapes that I picked up as a child, called King of the Monster Trucks, which was a Scimitar production that was available nationwide in like Kmarts and department stores and things like that. In that video, you see footage from this race because Bigfoot filmed every single race they ever went to. They had every one of their races professionally filmed by themselves in addition to what was on TV. But I had never actually seen this race in its entirety until I actually found this clip. So it was nice to kind of get a little more of the backstory than what was shown in that VHS tape, and also see the context of the entire race. So I think that gives you the rundown of where we're at in the monster truck world. There's 10 trucks here in Indiana. Bigfoot obviously being the star of the show, but you've got Casper, you've got Crimson Giant, Clydesdale, Mad Dog, Goldust Express, Texas Toy, Pony Express. I feel like I'm probably missing one or two other ones, but we'll get into it as we go through each race. This show, it was on ESPN, but the TNT shows were produced by a handful of different companies and syndicated in a few different markets, and this was the first incarnation of those shows. It was hosted by Army Armstrong and Dave Grimm. Now, Army Armstrong, if you've watched any monster truck footage from the 80s or 90s, you've probably heard or seen him before. He was really the voice of monster truck racing up until like the late 90s, I want to say. Dave Grimm was the other host of TNT at the time, and you're getting Dave Grimm at like a 5 on this show as far as his intensity level goes. There are some other shows that we may or may not watch at some point, but there are some other shows that he's like the lead commentator on where he just screams, and he doesn't really do good play-by-play commentary. He just kind of goes, whoa, hey, like that type of shit the whole time, just screams. On this show, he's very muted. He's got Army there next to him to really kind of handle the play-by-play, so he's kind of just there for a little bit of, like, you know, muted color, if you want to call it that.
The occasional whimper, if you will.
Yes. I want to say there's maybe even one little time he kind of, you get a quick blip of a screech from them.
But, a quick blast.
Yeah, but it's very quick if it is there.
Yeah, is Army Armstrong, is that his Christian name?
Is that I'm pretty sure it is. I hope it is. I really hope it's not a work name.
Armstrong would be the one thing it could be.
That'd be sick.
I gotta look it up.
So like I said, this is a companion event with the tractor division, but we don't see any of that footage here. It's all monster trucks. 10 trucks in the show. And the course is a little more evolved compared to the other ones that you've seen previously. It's a full dirt course. It's not just piles of dirt thrown in front of, you know, a row of cars. You've got a starting mound, one other kind of speed bump-ish type jump, and then a row of, I don't know, 10, 12 cars, something like that. The Monster Trucks courses are really kind of in its baby stages of evolution. As the trucks get faster and stronger, you'll see them get more stretched out. You'll see the starting mounds and different things get put in different places, but they're still kind of figuring out here. And again, none of the trucks are really that fast or have that great of suspension, so it's not like they can really handle any crazy jumps or anything yet anyways. So that brings us to the actual start of the show. We start off with Pony Express and Bigfoot. Now, Pony Express was a truck, and actually, technically, it was a car. It was a Mustang. This was the first time it was ever shown on TV, I believe. And this truck got a lot faster and more competitive in like 89, 90. But at this point in 87, like a lot of the trucks of its era, the suspension was not figured out at all. It was very rigid, very bouncy, and it was really no match for Bigfoot whatsoever. Really was not a surprise at all to see that. You get an interview with Jim Cramer, I would say, aside from Bob Chandler, like the second longest Bigfoot employee. I think he's probably been there since the very beginning. He was one of the first ever drivers of the truck, and he actually just finally retired this past 4th of July after, I think, 40 years of driving the truck. He took his last run in it at the Bigfoot open house. But in 87, he was in charge of a lot of things at the shop, and he was also the one that was doing a lot of the driving at shows and things like that. So he has a little interview about how strenuous it is to drive the truck. He can kind of jostle around. He doesn't want to talk much about his competition. He doesn't want to throw anybody under the bus or let his competitors know who he's worried about facing later on. There's a couple competitive trucks, but really at this point in 87, nobody else has figured out how to go fast on courses like this other than Bigfoot. It wasn't until the next year that he finally saw some competition. The next up, we see Clydesdale versus the Mad Dog. Now, these are two trucks that were mainstays of the TNT division the entire time TNT ran. They did three full seasons from 88 to 90 after this, and these trucks were there the entire time. This is the first ever version of both trucks, and there was only one Mad Dog. Mad Dog is kind of a weird 80s Silverado that they altered the cab area to have the driver mounted in the center, put like a sprint car roll cage wing on it. It was one of the first trucks that really had a unique build to it. Up until this point, up until racing became a thing, it was your pretty standard, like, just truck bodies. There was a little bit of customization there, but as far as really changing the body design at all to look at even somewhat unique, there weren't many trucks doing that, but Mad Dog is one of the first ones to do that. And then Clydesdale was Bennett Clark. Bennett Clark was a rodeo guy who got into monster trucks. This was his first one. Every truck after this was some combination of pink and white. But the first one he built himself and was just blue and silver.
How slick were their roofs? The roofs
no
of the
slick
truck.
Roofs. They just the cars were just or the trucks were just flying over the roofs this time. They were not slick at all.
Yeah, no
very
slick
dirty,
roofs.
Very
yeah.
dry.
That's great.
And
really
you may remember how slick the roofs were a few years prior to this. So I'm
yes.
glad to hear that they some progress was made, you know.
Some growth.
And let's see here. So Mad Dog takes the win here. Mad Dog was a little more evolved truck at the time. The Breen brothers, because there was John Breen and Bob Breen, they had a couple different trucks throughout the TNT series. they were had built really strong engines, but their trucks were never really that fast or competitive. Like, they just never really figured the suspension out too well. Next up, this is one of the highlights of the video. We see the Texas Toy, with which is a extended cab, early 80s F-150 with a Detroit diesel engine in it, which was not a common engine combo back in these days. I mean, there were a couple of trucks that had jet engines, but anything that didn't have your more traditional supercharged motor wasn't really that fast. And we see that in these races. So Texas Toy faces the Goldust Express, Texas Toy owned by Leslie Anderson, who, again, starts out slow, but catches up at the end because that's how the diesel engines kind of worked out with their gearing and whatnot. And Leslie is this little stumpy, mulleted, like gremlin of a man who gets out of the truck. Gives a lot of one-word answers and more or less just agreeing with everything he's asked. You know, I know he's like, "Who do you want to face next? There's no telling." You know, why'd you go with the diesel motor? Because I like diesel.
Future in politics.
Man of few words.
Yeah.
He, stringy ass mullet just sticking out all weird in the back.
Yeah, this is the stuff that, to me, the hidden gems of these old monster truck races. I mean, the racing themselves, you know, a lot of times is hit or miss, especially with the frequency of these trucks breaking down in this time period. But the drivers, very few of them were well-spoken or had any sort of media training whatsoever. And Leslie has that on full display in these interviews. Let's see, what else is next here? The next race is Scott Hess in the Hercules versus General Ben. Scott Hess is a little baby bird of a man who takes the win. He probably looked like he was like 22 in this race, which was kind of weird.
He looks so young.
Yeah. A lot of these guys, I don't know where they got the money to build these like six-figure trucks, but a lot of them were pretty young back then when you go back and watch these old videos.
He had like nice feathered hair and this nice white satin jacket on.
Yeah, well, minimum wage went a lot farther back in the 80s than it does now, so you can probably make a nice stack working at the old 7-Eleven.
That's true.
Go out there and fund your monster truck.
He was confused as to how this course worked. His quote was, "These dirt piles are really tough. You hit them and you don't know where you're going to go." Like, bud, you should probably figure that out.
That's
like,
part of the show.
He kept it pretty straight most of his run, so I don't know what the hell he was talking about. Next
just,
up,
just a bad interviewer.
Well, again, Dave Grimm, he did not last very long. I should say that aside from, you know, his poor interview skills and his just incessant screaming, he was just not good at anything. And a little spoiler alert: the next evolution of the TNT series, Army Armstrong, is joined by a man named Richard Leake. As his co-host. So
hell we
go from Dave Grimm to
Dick
Richard Leake. Yeah, I didn't get that till I was an adult. But
I immediately got that. I did not know that, and that made me laugh internally immediately. So
there you go. Something to look forward
to. Does Dick Leake have an IMDb, and will you look it up for me?
I am almost sure he is dead. Like, I'm almost sure. A lot of monster truck folks are dead. I hate to say that. A lot of them are dead or in jail at this point, so... including both the men in this race, Casper versus Crimson Giant. Unfortunately, Marvin Smith just passed away recently, within the last like 6 months. Mm-hmm. Whereas Dale Harris in the Casper truck, he passed away, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, something like that. Casper is a big ass lifted Toyota. This is at this point 87, like the third evolution of the Casper truck. That originally started out as like a Toyota Land Cruiser, then it was just this basic lifted Toyota, but this one we see here has the quote unquote racing chassis, which lifts it up I don't know how many feet and probably adds 8,000 pounds to it. And you see Marvin Smith and the Crimson Giant. Now this truck, I believe it became one of the stomper trucks after 87. There were a couple different yellow stompers that were built as part of the TNT fleet, and both Marvin and Dale were TNT, another pair of drivers that were TNT mainstays throughout the series run. And Marvin Smith, being the little bit lighter truck, took the win here. Unlike Leslie of Texas Toy, Marvin is a substantially more well-spoken driver, and you know, had a nice little interview where he complains about the evolution of safety in monster trucks, where now you get strapped in, you got to wear neck braces, you got to wear helmets. It takes a lot longer to get out of the truck these days, so he wasn't too happy about that.
Their neck braces look like a neck pillow you would wear to get on your American Airlines.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is half the drivers weren't even wearing 5-point harnesses in these things. They were just wearing lap belts.
Yeah, I think I was better protected when I slept in the Albuquerque airport last week.
They would wear these neck braces, and they would wear like kidney belts, like motocross kidney belts. But there's footage, you know, early in truck footage of Bigfoot, you know, when they were just starting to launch the truck, and you know, the driver's body like completely folds, and it's insane it took that long to figure out like 5-point harnesses and those things. But you know, the trucks were heavy and the suspensions were pretty stiff, so I don't know how you kind of almost want to be a little bit loose in those things, because you just get jarred to hell until the suspensions got sorted. But that's neither here nor there.
It's the same logic as not wanting seatbelts back in the days of open-wheel racing before they had seatbelts, because it'd be better to be flung from the car than to burn alive.
Yeah.
When your bomb of a fucking car goes off. So.
That's fair.
You don't know until you know, you know?
The next round, we see Hercules over Texas Toy, but Texas Toy comes back in the next round as the fastest loser. This is a 10-truck field, so each, you know, competitive round, one truck moved on as the fastest loser, so we will see him later on. Now, Bigfoot, in his qualifying race, he faces Hercules, and it's a very ominous clip here. Because Bigfoot breaks his front drive shaft and gives an interview where he says, like, he's got a chance, you know, as long as he stays close to the ground and, you know, doesn't get too high, he's got a chance of pulling it off. Well, it doesn't really work out for him that way. But to see all this stuff again, to see the full context of this race after only seeing that crash for years and years and years, like, it's, to me, incredibly interesting. And if you've watched any Bigfoot footage at all from the 80s and early 90s, you saw this wreck. It was just one of those things that, you know, until trucks became instantly repairable and are doing backflips and shit now, like, there were a handful of really spectacular wrecks, and this was, like, the first big one. Let's see here. Where was I?
You said it was ominous.
Yes, it was ominous. Well, yeah, we'll get there. The next up's a Texas Toy. He is back as the fast loser against Crimson Giant, and he pulls it off. That slow and steady diesel motor gets the win over Marvin Smith. As Leslie says, it's always slow coming off, but it gains up at the end.
That's a diesel for you.
He very eloquently rattles off, it weighs so heavy, 23,780 pounds. That is a fucking massive truck. Like, I think most monster trucks now are, like, definitely under 10,000 pounds.
Well, there's a ton less metal these days, especially in, like, the body and all that, so.
Right. Yeah. And here it is, the main event, Bigfoot versus Texas Toy. You know, like I said before, this wreck has been seen by every single Bigfoot fan who was around during these times. As mentioned before, he doesn't have front power, which, you know, really, as these trucks started to leave the ground and go way faster, that's when the four-wheel drive element really kind of comes into play, because, like a lot of different motorsports potential wrecks, you have to kind of power yourself out sometimes. And if you're too nose heavy or too rear heavy when you're landing with these things, you kind of had to throttle out, and get, that's how you kind of stabilize your truck. Bigfoot, unfortunately, did not have the ability to do that, and he paid the ultimate price here. He had no, Jim Cramer had no need to go as fast and as hard as he did. Like, he full on, like, already had the win before he ever touched the last set of cars, and just did what they call, a lot of drivers called back then, did a t-shirt run. Full throttled it, you know, everybody got their cameras out, they got that shot, but he landed on his front end and was unable to power out and didn't want to slam on the brakes and kind of just rolled over slowly. A couple bounces on the front end, straight to the roof of the truck. I don't think Bigfoot was necessarily the first truck to roll end over end like this, but it was certainly the most spectacular up to that point. Thankfully, the roll cage did its job and Jim was able to get out of the truck unscathed. Still won the race, unsurprisingly, but yeah, destroyed. I think this was Bigfoot 4. Which Bigfoot 4 was really the workhorse truck of the late 80s and early 90s.
I was going to say, what happened to the other three?
Well, so Bigfoot 1 still exists to this day. Bigfoot 2 and 3, they were just like 80s trucks that weren't really as equipped race-wise, so they were sold off.
Wasn't 3 the one they put the giant wheels on?
5 is the one that put the giant wheels. They actually technically put them on 4 first, but 5 was purpose-built to run those tires, and they still have 5 to this day. 4 was actually just restored and displayed at the Bigfoot open house. So, yeah, the first, like, 8 Bigfoots were all very different. Yeah, the first big feet. I'm trying to think. I think Bigfoot 6. I can't remember if it was 3 or 5 that was in... No, I think it was 3 that was in Roadhouse.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Which, going back to Bigfoot VHS...
The greatest movie of all time.
Going back to Bigfoot VHS tapes, in Bigfoot Strikes Back, which came out, I think, in 89, that was a, you know, home video. There's a very good collection of behind-the-scenes footage from Roadhouse. They show the scene where Bigfoot's driving through the lake, and with this behind-the-scenes footage, you see that Bigfoot almost tips over in this river when filming that, and then they do a lot of really cool behind-the-scenes footage of the car crash through the car dealership.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, this is one take. They, you know, but a lot of really cool stuff that I didn't see Roadhouse till I was an adult, and I never even put two and two together that this movie was this legendary. I just knew of it. Bigfoot was in a movie.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah. I gotta say, I really, the one thing I took away from the wreck, other than just the violence of it, was just how pissed off Jim Cramer was getting out of the truck, knowing he'd fucking totaled it. It's like, you know, the same thing like a bull rider or a rodeo cowboy does when they get bucked off. You know, yeah, they just got their ass whooped, and they're definitely, it could be hurt, but they're more pissed off that they failed, and they, you know, they wrecked.
Oh.
And in this case, he just folded that truck up.
That to me, this is my favorite moment of the entire show, because again, seeing that footage on that the Bigfoot King and the Monster Trucks tape, Jim very calmly kind of goes frame by frame through what happens in the wreck, but because it's after the fact, there's no real emotion there. He's kind of just clinically talking about what happened. Where here, seeing him actually talk about it moments after it happened, you can see how, like you said, how upset he is, how he's pissed off. You know, his wife's there. You've got Bob Chandler there. Bob Chandler, he I wouldn't say he was excited that the truck wrecked, but he wasn't pissed. I think he was, like, thrilled that Jim was okay. But he was almost just like, well, this is what happens. This is part of the deal, which I guess is, you know, kind of the attitude you want to have from an owner.
Put on a hell of a show.
Yeah, for sure.
Man to get out in like a fucking Dickies work shirt that's embroidered and know, no fire protection. Like Ashley said, that fucking like neck pillow from TJ Maxx, you know, just under his helmet, and to just escape without injury and just be fucking mad. Like, God, what a tough son of a bitch.
Just the quote that does it for me was, I got up there, I played the odds, and lost. Like, just that delivery of that line was just so like poignant and fucking like very cool to see. Again, contextually, never ever seeing these interviews as they happened and all the post wreck footage, like, it was just really cool. And again, for an early monster truck racing moment, this is very, very important, and you know, helped kick off really TNT's I wouldn't say dominance, but I mean, they were the primary racing organization. Like, USHRA did their own parallel race divisions, but the world title, I guess, wasn't as celebrated for whatever reasons. Some trucks ran both circuits, but a lot of them kind of stuck to one or the other. But yeah, TNT was kind of, they did it a little bit differently. They made it seem a little more like a motorsport than USHRA did. So that's why I picked this video, and hopefully you guys enjoy it. You know, next up, we'll be in 88, which is really when things start to heat up as far as monster truck racing goes. Rob and Ashley, do you guys have any final words, any thoughts on this video?
I mean, this is definitely my favorite of the bunch, not just because of the length, but it really does, it really kind of encapsulates everything nicely. Maybe I've said this about one of these videos before, but again, this is a world I don't know much about, and this really does kind of wrap up a lot of stuff, and it actually provides more questions than answers, which I assume will be answered in future installments of this segment. So thanks, Brian, for bringing this one. Again, like I said, monster trucks is not something I know shit about, so it's just pure entertainment for me. And yeah, this is a good one, folks.
If you could find us more interviews with Leslie Anderson, that'd be great.
Yeah,
this is the only one I've ever seen, to be honest. That truck, so Texas Toy, it didn't really run that much. I don't think it did. I don't know if it did any races in 88 as things really, you know, kicked off. Like you could see, the truck was not very fast. It was big. It was heavy. I can think of like one or two other times I saw it, but I'll have to see if I can find any interviews. That is a truck that actually still exists to this day. It ran in unrestored condition up until 3, 4, 5 years ago, and then somebody in Texas, yeah, but it looked like hell. Like, it still ran, but like the body was like falling off. Yeah, it was just, I'll have to send you photos, but it had like no paint left on it, and somebody restored it, and I don't know, kind of gussied it up a little more than I would have done. I like when trucks get kind of stay more how they look actually looked, as opposed to like a fantasized version that some, you know, some of these restorations get, but whatever. It's still cool that it exists.
Yeah, like giving,
but,
you know, Bigfoot a tail, you know, or Ty Gibbs' tail on Bigfoot.
You'd be surprised at some of the things you see.
You like that, True Love, huh?
I didn't expect you to tie that into this.
Oh, it all ties together, buddy.
All right, well, I think that is going to wrap up our trip to Applebee's, but one of our hosts is going to be taking a trip this weekend, aren't they?
Yeah, I was just going to say, True Love, you're going to Bristol.
I'm going to Bristol. I will be there all fucking week, so if anyone out there is going to Bristol, slide in those DMs.
Slide on in.
But, you know,
that's you're asking for it with that.
Polite, the gates have opened, folks.
I'm going up to Nashville tomorrow, and then Thursday go to Bristol to see the truck race, and then I'll be camping for 3 nights, and I fucking hate camping.
Oh.
But you know,
it's tent camping or RV camping? What are you doing?
It's tent camping because, you know,
it's the gangster shit
the
right there.
Worst.
Well, I also.
You got your Crocs all ready to go? You got your Crocs and your cargo shorts? Right. You need to borrow any Ryan Priest t-shirts from me?
I need to borrow some cargo shorts.
I can help you out with that.
Definitely don't own any of those.
You learn to love them, trust me.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Never been to Bristol, man. I'm always jealous when you guys go. I gotta change that at some point.
Well, I want to go back for the actual concrete race. I'm good not going to another dirt one. Although it was fun, don't get me wrong. But
yeah,
you know,
yeah, the night race is definitely also on the bucket list for me. So I'm sure it's gonna be a blast, and I love a good Saturday night race. So
yeah, I've got plans Saturday night, but I'm going to try to watch as much of it as I can. So I'll have it on my phone the whole time.
Some good paint schemes this weekend, too.
Yeah, Chase Elliott's
back.
Looks pretty hot, too. That black and gold.
Yeah, that looks good.
Yeah, like Justin Haley had Mountain Dew on his car.
Man, we're getting close to the end here. We're
only
in there.
I mean, it's...
I was going through the calendar of races I've got left to go to this year, and I'm supposed to go to Thompson Wednesday night or tonight, if you're listening to this on release day. And that got rained out preemptively. So it's just the fall final at Stafford, World Series at Thompson. I might go to the Haunted 100 at Waterford, and then I'll be down at the World Finals in Charlotte, and that's it. That's championship weekend for NASCAR, so we're getting down to the end.
Yeah. I don't have anything set on the schedule for the rest of the year, but I'm trying to get at least one or two more races out of it, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's definitely like big event season for short track racing.
Yeah.
So everyone's kind of closing up shop and all that shit. So this is the time to go out, but, and you know, there's no better time to go out than fall and sit outside, in my opinion. But
yeah, I agree.
I'm sad. I'm sad it's coming to an end.
Well, I mean, there's a couple little things throughout the winter, and you know, the racing season, off season's not that long compared to
every other
sport.
Really exist
so.
Anymore. Yeah. There is a pretty sad gulf between the Dome and the Chili Bowl or the Tulsa Shootout. And then after the Chili Bowl's done, there's a little bit of a lull. But, yeah, you're right. There is really no rest for any of these guys. So. Yeah.
They let them open their Christmas presents, and then they got to go back to work.
Exactly. Yeah, they're in Tulsa come, I think it's the 28th or some shit like that. It's wild.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks. Well, as always, you can follow us on Instagram at Meet Me at Applebee's and on Twitter at Meet Me at the Bees. I'm Speedway Screen and all the things, and SpeedwayTSJ.etsy.com. And she's already welcomed you into her DMs, but you can find Ashley's stuff at.
No. Yeah, Raccoon Queen 69420 on Instagram. That's the new name.
Oh, fuck. It's still, it's Snake Mountain _ True Love. Maybe I'll post some stuff from Bristol if there's service from my sad tent with no electricity.
You won't, but that's okay. Rob Motes _unofficial on Instagram and Twitter, X, whatever the fuck it is. And yeah, that's about all I have here. True Love, you we gotta get out of here because True Love actually has her family's coming over to Applebee's. We've been here for like an hour and they're about to come sit down at the same table, and she's gonna have a second meal here with the family and pretend like this one didn't happen. So we'll scoot on out of here. But
it's family dinner night. I gotta go to my aunt's house and I think we're having tacos.
Oh, girl, that's what's up. Well, have fun at Bristol, bud. I'm always jealous anytime y'all go to the racetrack without me. I do take it very personally. And
just fucking come to Bristol. I do have hot passes, so y'all look for me on Friday because I'll probably be trying to stand as close to Dale Jr. as possible. So.
Hanging out in Carson Hocevar's pits.
Don't do any shots with him this time around.
Shots with Carson Hocevar?
Nah, with Dale Jr.
Blake, was it Blake Shelton? No, it was Dierks Bentley.
Oh, yeah, that's Bentley.
Yeah.
Brian remembers that better than you because he was holding your cooler while you were having a good time. So.
Oh, no, look at this one.
Yeah, this is why Brian's not going to Bristol either. He's tired of being used up.
Yeah, that's it.
I'll find someone else to hold my cooler. Can't take coolers in the infield anyway.
All right, y'all, we did it. Right at 6 o'clock. We'll talk to you later.
Cheers.
Bye.